How's it going? I think the best thing to do, because there's so many people have been hanging around here to particularly to see you, and they've been filling in very entertaining fashion. Congratulations to our
the entertainment ends
concert
now.
Party. I think the best thing to do is to in a moment go and throw this open to the floor. Actually, if anybody's got any questions, first of all,
we've got some questions.
All right. First of all, what's your first memory of going to a festival or being aware of a festival or seeing a festival on TV or anything like that?
Pete Seeger at a very, very early age at a weird outdoor kind of hippie festival.
Right.
It was really primetime hippie 1968.
Can you remember what he was playing?
He was playing the banjo.
Yeah, big audience. It's very small.
I mean, I don't know if it was a festival. It's just like he was playing outside.
And that's what struck you as a festival.
Yeah. Well, I was eight.
No, fair enough. What about you?
I don't think I ever went to festivals as a kid. But we played one of the first ones we played was I think Roskilde, and in the tradition of unbearably rainy. Outdoor festivals, it was incredibly wet and muddy. But as I recall, Bob Dylan was there, and it was during that period in his career where he was performing songs that were internationally famous, but you couldn't tell what he was playing.
Right.
You'd be about halfway through the song, you'd be like, that's All Along the Watchtower. No, that's...
Masters of War. No. Yeah. Yeah, it was like stump the audience.
He's been doing that for a long time. Yeah.
It was very exciting. But it was new to us.
So what have you learned? You've played, presumably, quite a number of festivals. What have you learned about playing festivals?
Oh, bring wellies.
Yeah.
Bring wellies. We didn't learn that until 5 minutes ago. Yeah.
But in terms of performing,
bring wellies.
You know, The thing about playing shows in general is you can be very aware that a microphone. If you do a club show, you can do a dynamic performance where things get very quiet or very loud, and it all kind of can work. All those things are available to you. The strange thing about just having things scan be understood when you're talking or singing, you actually have to kind of sort of puff yourself up into arena rock size,
yeah,
which is it doesn't come naturally, but no. you figure out how to do it after a while.
So there's no point being diffident on in a festival.
Well, what's weird is you try to do something subtle and it actually doesn't scan. Nobody notices. People don't notice.
I think Mussolini went through the same process.
Yeah.
He tried to be subtle and nobody noticed. And,
So when you play a show like this, are you having a different set list than you would normally do?
We have the Mussolini set list.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
what are the features of the Mussolini set list?
Well, the other thing is you can't assume that it's your crowd. I just had an experience talking to a guy who's working these shows. He'd never heard of us before, and he was just like, you guys are so great. I mean, that was a great show. Like, who are you? Like, what do you do? And it's just like, I mean, it's a great opportunity for us to, we're often perceived as a cult type band, like a band that you either like or hate, and I think it sort of behooves us to try to reach out to the people who think they're supposed to hate us and come over to our side.
Is it frustrating to say to people, well, we've been around for how long? 30 years?
Yeah.
30 years.
Well, I mean, 29, if you're counting.
Well, I mean, actually, in a way, a lot of the people that we're speaking to have not themselves been around for
right.
them. So it's always a process of getting new people interested.
Yeah, you know. Now, you, in the last few years, you've branched out. You've done some records for children, haven't you?
Yes.
Played shows for children. Has that helped seed a new audience in any way?
Yes. We're indoctrinating young.
It's hard to know how much they'll stick to it. Like, if they'll think like it's just some version of the Monkees or something. In their I don't know. It's hard to know if we're actually creating permanent fans.
Oh, right. I mean, this is potentially like something you like a lot as a little kid could become incredibly uncool by the time you're like 14. So there is that risk, I guess.
But I was told recently by somebody, who's like our age, there was this period like 10 years ago in the United States where a lot of outsider teens embrace the Beatles as a, I mean, we were playing that Beatles song, and I was sort of, they embrace the Beatles as sort of a form of unified otherness to, you know, they weren't climbing on the, to the Britney, you know.
It was alternative in an odd
way.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for us, I mean, having grown up with the Beatles, it's hard for us to think of them, the Beatles, as in any way, you know, it's like the
alternative.
It's like, yeah, it's like the God alternative.
Yeah.
But evidently, he was saying that he felt like now there was a kind of a similar, a smaller but parallel thing happening with teenagers and They Might Be Giants, which is a very strange idea for us. But I guess, I don't know, maybe we're sort of occupying the same place like Frank Zappa or Captain Beefheart or somebody like in our teen years. You know,
so you get new generations coming along and they're looking at
various different
the landscape
stages,
of
yeah.
music in a
yeah.
totally different way.
Yeah. yeah.
You, it, what's your key song for doing for kids? You know, what's the one that goes over best with the small children?
Clap Your Hands is a pretty good unifying one because it's just like it's in the, you know, you don't, it's not about anything, it just is something.
Right, right. And do you find that audiences generally, and does this apply to children, they like something to do during a show that you
they like the confetti cannon. And they like the experiential stuff. I mean, they just, you know, they want to be alive.
Right,
know?
Right.
And they're new at it.
Right. Right, exactly.
And do you adopt any of that with your grown-up shows?
Well, weirdly, we brought the puppet show into the grown-up show, and it's even more popular for the adults, actually. I mean, we discovered it very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. So are there anybody, I think Gareth is wandering amongst you over there in the green jacket. If there's anybody there...
Hey, I want to thank everybody for sticking around. Like, I have to tell you, like, we've been completely confused for about an hour, having no idea what this was or where we were going. So thank you for being here. I know we're officially New York uncool late.
Right.
Is there anybody there who's got a question they'd like to put to the gentleman? While you're doing that, I've got a question. You've had quite a bit of involvement, quite a bit of success with songs that were used on TV, and commercials and so forth.
Well, we've done a lot of things. We've created a lot of material for television and commercials and movies. We don't get the really sweet deal is to get your song that already exists licensed for top dollar,
right?
You know, because then you don't really have to do any work, and hopefully it's attached to something super dignified. that's kind of like what we have in mind. But instead, you know, people call us up and ask us to kind of do their specialty thing, and those jobs are some of them are good, some of them are a little bit difficult. We just got through doing this one thing that was pure
catastrophe,
pure torture.
What was that?
We're not going to say.
We can't say, but we can
tell you it's not going to happen.
Oh, really? Right. So you go all the way along the line, and then it didn't happen.
Our manager has really perfected the whole kill fee thing.
Oh, good.
Because it used to be that we would do these jobs, and the kill fee would be less than it would cost to make it. So it would be like we were being punished to work for people who are being mean to us. I mean, it was like punishing on every level.
So what's the kind of classic...
It sucked.
What's the classic way that might happen? Somebody comes to you and says, I've heard a tune on your fourth album.
It's not even that. We've got a thing that isn't working in our project. We want you to rescue it, but we don't know what we want. We just want something better, and we'll do a series of demos. And in this situation, it was demo after demo that wasn't somehow solving the problem.
Right, you're trying to guess what it is that they
want.
They
don't know.
It's sort of a unique to movies have this unique problem where there's a lot of like throwing money at things at the end to try to make them not be bad movies.
So we get called
in to save the bad movie from itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work.
Do you have to play this stuff to committees and type
up? You have to have conference calls that are that involve people who are in the back of car services on the way to airports, on planes, or, you know, like completely unintelligible Darth Vader voices. You know, you don't know if they actually are Darth Vader or they just sound like Darth Vader because of their phone. Sometimes I think it's the former. But, it's very much by committee. It's a very much that stuff tends to be very show business stuff. But we're luckier than most because when we do get tapped to do original music, they either think that we're going to be versatile, which we can be, so they ask us to do different kinds of things, or they just like our general aesthetic. And so we're kind of in the catbird seat. I mean, we have no right to complain, but we are happy to complain.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what's your most successful tune that's been used on TV? You did it.
Well, we did the Malcolm in the Middle song.
Malcolm in the Middle.
Which we got a Grammy for. And
what's he like going to the Grammys?
Super fun.
Well, super weird because, I mean, even after the third nomination, we felt like we were these weird double agents, like sneaking
around.
You
weren't supposed to be the...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, we're the what's wrong with this picture. I mean, especially when we won for Malcolm in the Middle because we were in a television and movie category. So it was like, I mean, thank God, you know, Pearl Harbor had a horrible theme song because I'm sure it would have been, if it had been even halfway okay... It would have won. It was like, you know, it's like Sting, They Might Be Giants, Celine Dion. And it's just like, we are not going to win this.
But you must have done.
We did, we did.
Who did you win against? Who did you beat? You must remember.
We beat Sting.
That was the list.
Yay. Yeah, yeah.
Actually, we that was a separate incident. We beat him. Yeah.
It was in the bathroom with Ike Turner. Ike knocked him down.
Yeah. He was very surprised.
Yeah.
The Grammys
he's fit, though. He is very fit.
I bet.
Yeah, yeah.
The Grammys have an immense number of categories, don't they? They keep trying to cull them every year, don't they? So they can get them down to manageable...
I think is wise. Until they cut the categories that we are eligible
for.
We have become aware that there are actually two children's categories, because we won for the second Grammy we got was for a kid's record, and there's an alternate category in children's records, which is best children's spoken word. So if anybody's feeling ambitious out there... You know, it seems
that's the one to target.
Kind of obtainable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a greenfield site.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I think
dreams come true.
Over here, this lady over here.
Okay.
Hi. Right. My name's Sarah Bonetto, and
Sarah.
I'm a stand-up comedian from Australia, but I live here now. Now, 10 years ago, do you remember doing a gig in Melbourne where you played Flood in sequence, like the whole album Flood in order?
I was
at that gig.
Yeah.
Now my friend Andy, who's a stand-up from Melbourne, we got a set list after the show. Great, right? Great. He said, "Oh, I'll take it home in my backpack because you haven't got a bag." And he lost it. It's been 10 years, and I'm hoping maybe there's a set list floating around today.
I can tell you.
I've got it. I've got it right here.
For real?
It's the album.
Of course not.
Why would I? I'm
psych.
Every set list.
No.
From the last 10 years.
It's okay. Yeah. It's just been 10 years. It's fine.
But I can tell you, there is this crazy internet resource. There's a fan. No, it's really actually quite outstanding. You have to listen to the words I'm saying. They've already taken the mic away from you. So there's this thing, They Might Be Giants Wiki, and it will have not only the show you went to, but it might even have photographs, posters, and of the very set list you had in mind.
That's extraordinary. Were you onto this idea of playing albums in sequence earlier than most people? Because that's quite a common thing at the moment, isn't it? That people are doing classic albums.
Oh. Yeah.
I don't know.
We did.
I remember Sugar playing their album in sequence before we ever did, I think.
Well, they had one album.
They had only one album, So they played it in sequence. That was the thing.
I remember we played it once at the Ventura Theater, which is like kind of like a place in the middle of California where rock dies. And we were trying to figure out a way to make the show more interesting for everyone. Like, you know, if you were a fan coming from San Francisco or Los Angeles, it was just on that Wednesday night or something. So we actually played our very first album in sequence. You know, this was, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago. And we thought it would be like a real treat. And it completely left the crowd in the dust. I mean, they were just like,
Why would you do that? We're
deep inside side two, and they're just like, this sucks.
I think we've got somebody else with a question here.
I've got a couple of questions. I work with a lot of artists who are working on the self-release model. I'm wanting to know how you felt when you sold out so quickly of your super VIP club for the Joiners.
Oh, sold out. When you said sold out, I thought we were going a different direction of this.
When you sold out so quickly. Buddy. And question number two is, will there be another kids album? Here Comes History, maybe?
The Here Comes History in the United States would be like a total cultural bomb. Like, it would just explode, like, so... I don't know, if we could get, you know, like, collaborate with, like, Howard Zinn's people or something and do, like, a People's History of the United States, I think that would be good.
The lowest-selling thing of all time.
Yeah.
You've done different subjects, haven't you?
It's they're very nice framing devices, though, because, you know, it's like the ABCs is just about language. It's a pretty open topic.
Right.
You know, we did one about science, and even the science one, we weren't really on thin ice, but it made you aware of, like, how paranoid the times are, because all the questions were like, facts, controversial. You know, it was very depressing in a way.
I figure your core audience was the Tea Party, so.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, it was a project we did through Disney, and it's getting sold in all these in like regular like places where our records aren't normally sold. They're sold in like Targets and Walmarts and stuff like that. So we're kind of swimming in that.
Right. There were people from that world who were bitterly disappointed that we wrote a song about evolution on a science album. They were like, I can't believe I've been a fan for so long.
It was outrageous.
I'm so let down.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing is that you don't know who likes you, and you sort of you just put yourself out there, and when you do something like that, you quickly realize how many people just don't want to hear you talk about stuff like that. And it's hard because, you know, we're just, you know, we're knee-jerk liberals from the Northeast.
And the question about the self-release model. Tell us what we were delighted.
It was great, actually.
It basically helped find it. Well, we've done a lot of things, self-produced things over the year. Over the years, usually they're kind of humble, small failures. But the fan club thing was really a way to help just finance the final part of our album because we had gone much longer recording it and were rapidly running out of money. So
in a way, the scary part of it was not that so many people bought into it, but that we have to now fulfill the agreement, our end of the agreement, you know.
But it's a nice thing.
It's a serious point, isn't it? Because traditionally, record companies did all that stuff, didn't
they? Exactly.
Artists take on this stuff. Yeah. And it's a huge amount of work, isn't it?
I spent an hour yesterday stuffing plastic bags full of T-shirts and stickers. So
I don't know if you're joking or not.
I'm not joking at all.
In the van on the way here kind of thing.
Look at how tired I am, man.
No, seriously.
Yeah, I'm serious. I'm absolutely serious. Yeah.
So stuff like that, when people contact you, they're contacting you, your house kind of thing.
Well, not quite our house.
Okay.
Well, through the miracle of the internet, you get to keep your house very far away from
your
house.
But all this stuff is just causing more and more work, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a good, you know, it's good. I mean, this is good. I think the fan club thing is interesting because it also gives us a chance to, like, we did an EP for that's coming out in August that's just some, like, super crazy songs. And got to release the Tesla song that wasn't on the Science record and that, so it'll come out.
Well, look, I'm sorry, that's all we got time for because we've got another speaker in here at 5 o'clock. But thanks very much, gentlemen, for coming
out.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, Harvey Joyce. And please plug your new record. Your new record, which is out.
You can get the download at our website on the 18th or 19th, and you can buy it here in stores on like August 1st because I guess it got delayed somehow. I'm not sure why.
Thanks very much for coming along.